Warning. People may find the following content distressing. If you wish to seek help, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. There is no easy way to open this episode. I was on Facebook around a month and a half ago and stumbled on a post from our next guest. What this man did was nothing short of heroic, and it took massive a set of kegs to do what he did, and that was to post a video and open up about being sexually abused as a child. In today's world, we see organizations and internet influencers pushing the narrative to speaking up and starting a conversation. Well, this is what happened. I reached out, and this gentleman was asked if he wanted a platform for his story, and incredibly, I'm grateful to have the chance to interview him today. John Bailey, thank you, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, mate. Much appreciated.
Before we get into your story, I'd like to you to share with us what the motivation was behind the video on Facebook and what was the impetus in making that step?
As I said to you in the past, basically a quick background is about 12 years ago I broke my spine in a work injury, and before that I was a pretty big unit. I weighed about 145 and went down, lost a lot of weight and lost a lot of muscle. And then the opportunity came up to take one of my abusers to court, and I took him to court. And then during that process, I found myself basically lost. I'd always been a fighter, and I found myself lost and going, why am I not fighting? Why am I so ashamed? And I guess the big one was that I needed to face it and face my fear and come forward. And to have a representation of a bloke's bloke and not these new age guys that you see all the time represented as child abuse, heritage and history, so on.
How old were you when it started?
So I was abused, I can't say about the first abuse, but this one here, I was 10 years of age.
Wow. Can you take us back to your childhood before the abuse started and give us an idea of the lead up? What sort of life, what was life like growing up?
So, look, I grew up in a time when, you weren't allowed to cry. You were told if you want something to cry about, I'll give you something to cry about at those type of good old days. I was a footy player. Even at a young age, I was played minor league, little league, everything else. And including up into that stage, to be honest, my dreams were to become a vet or something like that. I actually found an old school document from primary school that stated that. And then when the abuse happened, it just changed my life.
For anyone who listens to crime stuff, one thing that stands out to me is that these people are very methodical in the grooming of their victims. What kind of tactics, if you will, did your attacker use to groom you? Was it things like, you hear, this is our secret, or it's perfectly natural, or any of that kind of stuff?
So for me, mine was, my own stories, I don't know if it'd be unique, but my own experience. So what happened with my attacker was the fact that he used the fact, it was the first one I ever confided into that had been abused prior. And I told him that, and then he utilised that to actually abuse me. And, wow. He used that. He was a family friend, and he was part of a very well-known 2,000-year-old establishment, which I can't say where.
Yeah.
He used that to his benefit.
How long did it go on for?
So with this one, it was only a few instances that it happened. But it was pretty graphic what happened. I've got to be very cautious, as you can imagine. It has been through court,
yeah.
And we're going through the civil claim now, so there's a lot of things that I cannot mention.
Yep.
So I'm only giving you a rough overview.
No, that's fine, as much as you're comfortable with. So,
yeah, mate.
At what stage did you start feeling that it wasn't right? That is personal.
Oh, look, to be honest, I think that anybody's been, look, to say what it is, mate, anybody's ever been penetrated or raped, it's not right from straight. even though you've been told that it is okay, you know it's not right. And then to make matters worse, the new program of the schools was going around with this life education, started around the same time, and my youth, for the first time they said it and how it was presented, that if anybody touches you as a boy, it's bad, but you're bad. So that's what was the other part that I took from it. It was, so me as a child, I took it as a part that I did something wrong and I deserved that to happen to me, which changed the direction of my life to being one of being pretty outward, being violent, being into drugs. So even I started smoking at the age of 10 and, went from there.
Can't even begin to process that, you know.
But that's the funny part is, though, you don't see it as anything unusual. You just see that that's what should happen. You don't see yourself as different, even though you believe you are, but you push it down.
Yeah, suppress it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent your body does that itself as well. So,
Look, and it's crazy. Like, I tried to commit suicide at, I think I was 11 the first time I tried to commit suicide.
Oh, jeez.
And it matures you once you are physically abused and mentally abused at the same time. It changes your mental state as well. You can't, I think that the impact that it has on other victims that I've spoken to, others, I don't like saying victims, we're fighters, we're not survivors, we're fighters. The other fighters that I've met over since I've started this journey of being more open and public about it is that it seems to be a common trend that we begin to think a lot more about life in a different aspect because that innocence was taken away from us. So we had to become, it was fight or flight. And look, I'd love to be able to say, oh mate, I manned up and I grabbed my hairies and I bloody kept on going, but there was many times that I wanted to just quit it and I tried.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, it's easy to try and say, oh, look, mate, I had my shit together, but I was such a young age when the first abuse happened and the second abuse, it was, yeah, it changes it, mate, forever.
Yeah, I can, That's harrowing stuff, dude. Did you...
I never had any male, really close male friends, even though there was guys that I went to school with that I was close with, but yeah, but it changes a lot of things, mate. It absolutely, like, for example, something so random, I couldn't even masturbate, mate, because it made me sick, you know. So I had to make up stories at school growing up that I did, like, because if you say you didn't, let's be honest, everybody's gonna go, mate, you're a liar.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to make up lies, say that I could, and I was, and you know, all my mate, my mum nearly caught me, rah, 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 and I'm like, mate, I used to look down, and my old fella would look up at me, and my dick would look up and say, mate, you're not that way inclined, goodbye. it changes so many different things, mate. It just, it changes your whole, the impact on the person's life, it's immeasurable. I think that's the hardest part.
Or did you ever try telling anyone, reaching out when you were younger?
When I was 18, I gave up. Before that, just to give you a bit of background, I was 17. I got head-eye tackled in rugby union, and I got a blood clot in the back of my brain. And before that time, I was into a hell of a lot of drugs, and I was doing a lot of dodgy shit. And basically, a few things changed in my life. I learned how to walk again because I was paralysed all down my right side and so on and so forth. And then I went out west and then moved to Sydney and a few things happened in my life and people came into it. And then around that time, I went to see a counsellor for the first time. And it came up about that I'd regressed all this shit about being abused.
Yeah.
And As a survivor, as a fighter, that's what you do. You push it in the back of your mind. You don't want to know it. You don't want to remember it. So it just goes in the back.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I came up and I rang. I guess you call him my father. And I said to him, you know, what had happened? And I confronted him for the first time ever. And I said, these two people had abused me when I was a kid. And his response was, so, you know, that's shit, but you just got to get over it.
Yeah.
Think about what's going to happen to your family. So
still old school.
I think it was still old school, and, you know, you just got to man up and deal with it.
And I suppose and the fact that he was... The repercussions of who it was as well, it seems like they were high-profile sort of people, so...
Yeah, there were people that would have been a big impact in his social life as well and in his business as well, what he did at work, so I can understand that. And then he was concerned about the impact on the family. So I just, as you do, you nut up and you keep on going. But so that was the first time I ever came out publicly. That was hard. So that's about 18 or 19 is when I first came out about it.
I can only imagine that you would have developed some trust issues. How did it affect future relationships or even your perspective on sex as a whole in years later?
Oh, it's quite interesting. And again, you talk to a lot of victims, a lot of fighters, and a lot of them will say they sabotage relationships.
Yeah.
Because you... got this underlying thing that you struggle with, that you don't believe that you're good enough, and you believe that you only deserve misery and shit because that's what you were made for. And my last abuser, that was what he actually said to me to rape me. He said, that's what I'm made for.
Yeah,
so
what?
Underlying in my head, that was always a major contributing factor, that you thought, well, that's all I'm made for, so that's what I'm here for. So, yeah, that was a big one. So that follow-on effect of relationships, friendships, look, it's a massive impact. At that age, even scientists, psychologists will tell you, you develop so many things at that age, and when that is corrupted, it changes everything. And it's very difficult.
When was the first time you opened up to friends, and how did they sort of react?
It's interesting. I didn't... I kept it down for many, many years, and I even from that podcast, I mean, that Facebook post that I did, there was guys that I went to school with that had actually mentioned me that are on that group, and it said that they never would have known.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know, they just never would have picked it as me. And there's a young guy that I mentored that couldn't believe the fact that it had happened to me, and when I came out about it, it gave him the strength to come forward about himself.
Oh, that's incredible.
So now he's on that journey to do that. And as he said to me, he never would have pictured a bloke like me that anything like that could have happened.
No, well, I've said to you in the past, mate, you look like the kind of guy that just goes down to the pub for a beer and a 500-gram steak every other day. So, you know.
I was the type of guy that used to go to the pub and, mate, I'd get kicked out because of fighting because, you know, I didn't have a lot of trust, and I had a lot of issues with, I had a low dickhead tolerance, especially on the Bundy. And
good old Bundy.
mate. And so therefore, I was always up for a blue. I wasn't the prettiest fighter, but I always liked fighting. And that was that security for me to keep on going in life and to protect myself.
Did you find the fighting, was that a way for venting for you?
Oh, it is. It was a way that I could protect myself outwardly, and it comes back to, as I said, with my... If I hadn't have broken my spine, I don't know if I would have had the balls to be able to come forward. Look, I weighed 145 kgs, mate. I was a big unit. I like to say that it was all muscle, but it was a lot of Coca-Cola and hot dogs and sausage rolls and that. But in still saying that, I was a big unit not to be messed with.
Yeah,
and that's the way I wanted to be, so no one would ever mess with me. And if there was something stupid to try and do, jump off a cliff or jump off a bridge or do something like that, I'd be the first one to be nutting up to do it because to prove that I wasn't fearful. Like same with the drugs, you know, like I did everything from, and the only drug I never tried was injecting shit into me, but I did everything else and I did it with a vengeance. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. But the funny thing is, it's not a story that's alone. It's the majority of blokes that have come forward that are men, and blokes, Aussie blokes, as I like to call them, that have come forward. Majority of them were raped like I was, but yet don't feel the need to come forward because it's one of the most scary things you'll ever do in your life.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. Because, I mean, you know, the world that we live in is full of ridicule. No matter what your story is, there's someone out there to shit on you, you know?
I get you. But here's the funny thing is, and I stop you on that because it's not so much the ridicule, it's the fact that because you build yourself up for so many years to say that you can't be touched, and you put a persona up that I'm not to be fucked with, excuse the French, but, you know.
No, go for it.
I'm not someone to be fucked with, so therefore, back the fuck up. And then when you come forward about this, you've actually got to admit that you were vulnerable. And the hardest thing that you find, and that a lot of society finds, is they see you as the man you are and you have become, but they don't see the child that you were before this happened. And I guess that big post is that, you know, that I did on Facebook was the fact that I needed to show people that, yeah, look at me, I'm a bloke. I'm not a new age guy. I'm not a liberal or anything like that. I'm just an Aussie bloke, but the shit's gone wrong in my life. But yet the funny thing is, mate, we don't see that. We don't. It's hard to, as even myself, when I watched that video back, and I only watched it back recently, and I didn't watch it after I did it. It's really interesting. I even look at myself and I go, how the hell could, you know, anybody have touched him? Because you don't see what happened when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And you don't see those child's faces when you were a kid.
Yeah.
You see the man and that highness in the eyes of, you know, I've had to push away life just to be able to survive and to fight. So that's that big one. It's not so much on public ridicule or anything like that. And then the other thing is too, you look at yourself and you go, well, if I would have come forward and had the strength earlier, imagine how many kids I could have stopped that happening to as well. And that's a hard one, you know, and you've got to live with that.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we're trying to build here on this podcast is that speaking out and showing your vulnerabilities isn't weakness at all. It's so much strength in that, you know.
Yeah, look, I'm hearing what you're saying. It's I think the big one is when you're dealing with anybody over their 30s and older, especially anybody over their 30s, so 40s, 50s, and so on. We grew up in a time when if you cried or anything like that, you had to have a reason to do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was culture. That was...
It was that culture that you were brought up in.
It was hard.
It was hard. But at the same token, we're in a society now that says that we can't be that anymore. And so there's loss of direction. There's no representation.
Yeah.
Like, what gets me is every day you look at the TV ads or news and you hear about this foundation for that foundation, and they're all about women's groups and about women based because all these women need help. And don't get me wrong, women do need it, but the problem is we have got... I'll just stop for a second and touch on something that was really strong for me to touch on and to understand, and it was the guy that I took to court, or the piece of shit that I took to court. One of the big things that helped me was the fact that he was calculating, he was intelligent, because Hollywood portrays these bastards, these pieces of shit as fat, overweight, dumb people that sit in a room and watch videos of children, and they can con a kid by saying, do you want a bag of lollies? Now, that's bullshit.
Mm.
The real reality is there's people in, and these people thrive on power. They thrive, these pieces of shit thrive on control.
Yep.
And that's how come there's so many of them still around, because they are very good at what they do. They're predators. These pieces of shit are very intelligent bastards.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody listening to this, it was a hard thing for me, because Hollywood, the news, everybody always portrays, and you have that thing in your head that you're thinking, wow, you know, it wasn't by someone intelligent, so, you know, they should have been caught. But these people are intelligent. These pieces of shit are very, very articulate. They're intelligent. They're predators. So, therefore, they are very good at hiding what they do. And they've done it for so long.
How do you think they get the upper hand? You know,
that's exactly right.
Manipulation. It's smart. Like you said, they're very intelligent people. They know how to tell a story. You know, like Gift of the Gab.
Oh, look, and it's, as I was saying, to use the analogy of a fighter, and I guess to go back to that analogy, it's if you get beaten by a 2 pound wet rag bloke, you don't see yourself as a fighter. And I think that the way that most people perceive, like, and yourself perceives, that you think that these are the 2 pound wet, ringing wet fighter that's beaten you. And in actual fact, they're not. They're this behemoth monster of a creature that's literally going to rip your arms off. And that's how come they're there where they are. And as a fighter, it's something you've got to acknowledge to say that, and it gives you power to know that you weren't beaten by a 2 pound weakling. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, these pieces of shit are calculating hunters, predators, pieces of shit. So I guess that's that part that, you know, that people have got to realise as well, with their friends are coming forward, or if they're, and even to change that public perception, that these people are wearing either suits or in, you know, in a position where they've got power and can leverage, and they are calculating.
Yep.
You know, they're the ones that are doing the damage, because they hone their talents to do that. And it's pretty fucked.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all.
Yeah.
Tell us, the first time you went to authorities with this, what was their reaction?
I tell you what, and I was really fortunate. When I went to the local establishment and I got to speak to the detective that I actually did mine to. If it wasn't, and I've said it to her time and time again, is that when you actually get to say to authority, and I say this to any fighter out there that's going to go through this and wants to have that next step, to be able to tell someone of authority of what happened, it, for me personally, it was an acknowledgement, and I wasn't namby-pamby, patted on the back, and in any way, form, it was straight down the line, it was what had happened, and they had to read it back, and I had to hear back in somebody else's authority words what had happened, and it made it real as hell. And it is bloody hard, but I tell you what, it gives you that innerness to go, wow, someone's actually listening. And someone of authority, and I hated the police growing up.
Yep.
So it just blew me away to have someone in uniform that it meant so much that they listened. And that was a big, big mind blowout, mate. It really was.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's
incredible. And I guess a lot of that hatred towards the police came from, why didn't they stop it?
Yeah.
When I was a kid. You know?
Wow. It's powerful stuff, man, eh? It really is.
And here's the other thing that I fight with, mate, and this is where our judicial system is wrong, because I was raped by two different people. The first one I haven't taken to court yet, because I haven't got, and I'll be honest, I can't nut up yet. because I'm just still dealing with this first, the second one.
Yep.
But it's interesting going through the civil claim and the court, how because I was already pre-damaged, they see that as not as bad, the impact it's been on my life, because I was pre-damaged. And yet my analogy is to them, I keep on saying, but if I had one arm ripped off and one leg ripped off by a piece of shit, and then the next one came along and I'd survive for a year or two with only one arm and one leg, and if someone came and took my last arm and leg, wouldn't that be worse than the person who's taken the first two? Because that last person's taken everything.
Mm.
And yet the judicial system does not see it that way. And that's bloody hard to focus on. They see you as pre-damaged.
Yep.
And it's all legal. And it's no emotions. It's straight down the line. Because I was pre-damaged prior, that this damage wasn't as severe because I was pre-damaged. And yet the severity of the last one, because it was someone in power, someone of importance and older, it impacted me so much more than the initial. And the fact that the last one that did it utilized the fact that I was weak because I was confused and I didn't know what was real, and I confided in that person, was the first person I'd ever confided in, that they turned around and utilized that to their own gain. That's that hard one.
Jesus.
And that's where our system's fucked. And for the jury members that are on that court, I feel sorry for them, because that's the other part of society. We don't want to believe that anybody could do that. We don't want to know that somebody who is in a power in like this piece of shit that is in jail, he was in a position around children, he was in a position of power, and very big power, and yet to understand and to look at a bloke like me now and to visualise that that could have happened would have been a very hard sell.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard thing to swallow for themselves. And even to the stage where I've had friends that have known me for years have seen that and gone, bullshit, I can't believe, and not that they deny what's going on, they just can't believe that I could hold on to that and not say anything. And that anybody could have touched me because I grew this persona that I was untouchable. And that's our issue that we've got. We don't have a judicial system that will allow victims and historical victims to get heard as a child, because it was a child that was raped, not an adult. And that's, let's be calling it what it is. When you are raped, you are raped. Doesn't matter what age you are, but it makes it worse when you're a child. So,
they work in mysterious ways, that's for sure. It seems backwards, doesn't it?
Mate, what should be happening is images of you as a child should be put in front, not the image of you, because it's not, you're a representation of what you were as a child, not who you are now.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And unfortunately, the jurors aren't people that are understanding of this. They don't. They're just general everyday people.
Yeah.
Some people don't even want to be there because, let's face it, how many people don't want to be on jury duty?
No, that's right, yeah.
And then to be able to imagine, not live through it, but just imagine what had happened to somebody. Mate, half those people would see something graphic and they turn it off the telly. Yet they're asked to put themselves in a position where they can see a male or a female that's an adult as a juvenile, and that's something that nobody can do unless you've been there. So it's their system's wrong.
Oh, wow. It's an incredible story, mate. It's...
And the funny thing is, Ellis, that you don't see it as that, you just see that you've lived your life.
Yeah.
You know, like people have said to me time and time again, you know, oh, you should write this down, you should do this and you should do that. And I'm like, but I just live. I survived for it. You don't see it as anything special. You don't see it as anything worse than anybody else. You just see it as living. And I think that's that hard thing that you've got to, yeah, it's bloody hard. That's that hard one.
Yeah. I mean,
but I will say this, and I recommend to everybody, if you're going to come forward, the police aren't your enemy. And take it from a bloke that, you know, yeah, it's when you do it and you come forward, you're treated with respect, you're treated with, you get a chance to say what happened without judgment, and you get a chance to say and get it read, it will be read back to you.
Yeah.
And it will be fucking hard, but
that's why you're a fighter.
You've got to be heard is the biggest thing you'll ever have in your life.
I know that that it's horrible, but are you able to pull any positives out of what's happened with your experiences? What positives have you gained? I know this sounds like a really stupid question, but what positives have you gained out of
it? It's the biggest thing that I've got is that I can finally try and live a life and try and do what I want to do. But at the same token, to know that he's away, to know that he's got that against him for the rest of his life, is a massive positive.
Yep.
The other positives are that it's hard to see at the moment, but I guess I'm going to be changing because you've got no choice in it. That's the hard part, is that it will change your life.
Yep.
And it's scary as shit because once you come out, you find that you're a lot more vulnerable than you've ever been before. But the other thing is, too, one of the biggest things is that I've got trust in blokes for the first time in my life.
Oh, that's amazing, yeah.
And I've got a group of brothers around that, to me, they've earned their right to be my brother. They are not blood. They're better than blood. These boys have earned it.
Yep.
It's very difficult. But the good part is you get that trust back to a point.
Where do you go from here, mate?
That's a good positive. Well, my biggest one is I've still got the civil case going on at the moment. And that's, I'll be honest with you, Ellis, it's that's a bloody hard one to do. So I guess after this is all finished, then I can actually reevaluate. But until that's done, it's going to be a hard one. I just keep on fighting every day, mate. And that's what you got to do. So,
well, just know that if shit gets tight, then you've got my number, man. So just...
I appreciate it, mate. Look, I've got a great support group around me.
Yep.
But I encourage everybody that's listening to this, if you're going to do it, you're going to come forward, try and get that support group around you. But the other thing is, too, and as I was saying about the cops, is that with that Royal Commission that went through, that now you actually get psychological help available to you straight away and take it. Don't think you got your shit together, because I did. And I woke up on my balcony of a two-story building in the middle of the night, standing there about to launch myself off.
Bloody hell.
Because I didn't get that help. And then I took that help, and it's helped me a lot. And, yeah, just don't be frightened to ask for help, because you're not asking for help because you're weak. You're asking for help because, just train like a trainer in a fight, if you're going to go up against a bloke you've never fought before, or you fought and you lost, you go and get yourself the best trainer possible to help you. And that's what you look at it like.
Yep.
So that's the best piece of advice I can give you, just anybody going through it. Find your support, and if anybody's going to try and tell you what to do and try to control you, get them out of your life. You don't need them. Be around those that are going to build you up and not tear you down.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mate, it's incredible, and I thank you again so much for coming on to the podcast, and I hope this gets shared everywhere. Like, the stories like this, I believe, need to be told to give others courage.
And we need to take away their strength, Ellis. That's the big one, mate.
Yeah.
They get strength by us keeping our mouths shut.
Exactly.
And it's... And anybody that's listening that's a fighter like me, you got to remember that you wouldn't let a little punk suck a puncher and get away with it and then brag that they did all well. Stand up and fight the bastards.
Yeah.
Fight them in a way that you can fight them with the courts. And you'll get there.
Yep. I heard someone say once...
For your time.
All the time in the world. This is what we're all about here, man. It's helping others. So I'm more than happy to give my time for that. So
much appreciate, Alan.
Yeah. John, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, mate, my pleasure.
You take care.
I hope it helps somebody. You too, mate.
Absolutely. Thanks, mate.